Yeah, why don't I just end with this question? This is a. I talked about this a little the other night. If your heart is. We have two things. We have a quiet mind and an open heart to deal with. If you just have a quiet mind, you may see the laws of karma. You may see the plan of the universe. You may see the higher wisdom. You may understand it all. But you lose your ground. You become like a god on earth. But you did take an incarnation. You are in a human body. And to be in a human body means to realize that you are part of humanity and have all the feelings that that generates. Pity, sadness, empathy, horror, beauty, joy, all of the human feelings. And to keep that balance is what the nature of compassion is about. Because compassion keeps the heart open so that you are feeling all the suffering of all the beings around you, which is really hard to do. It's some, especially like when you're a doctor or a nurse, it's so hard to keep your heart open when it's so much around you. And at the same moment, keep the appreciation of the way it's all law unfolding. Or as I said the other night, when Maharaji kept saying to me, Ram Dass, don't you see it's all perfect? The head shows you the perfection, which includes the suffering. Because we have been talking again and again about how suffering burns out stuff, how suffering awakens stuff in people. You'd never lay it on somebody, but when it's there, you see how it's working on them. That's the beauty of the mind. The mind can plumb the depths of the wisdom of the universe and appreciate the exquisite way in which it all works. But if you just stay up there, you get so cold. I don't know, did I talk about the yogi fast thing? I don't think I did. About the, when I was teaching Hatha Yoga, and somebody comes in and they say, I would like to fast. Oh, yogiji. And I say, are you healthy? And they say, yes. And I said, all right. And they say, we'd like to fast 4 days. I say, no, fast 9. And they go, 9? And I say, yes. Well, what can I take? Well, take warm water or lemon and water or mu tea or something. So they look courageous and they go out to fast for 9 days, right? And they come in after 7 days and they say, I haven't eaten in 7 days. There's a little bit of that ego stuff in there, okay? I mean, I haven't eaten in 7 days. So you kind of feed that. You say, pretty good, you're doing fine, only 2 more days to go. And then you walk out in the street. Somebody comes up and says, hey man, you got a quarter. Man, I haven't eaten in 7 days. Good, you're doing fine, just 2 more days and you'll be free. And you can feel exactly the whole issue right at that moment. They are both doing the same thing. They are both suffering. For one of them, the suffering is grace. For the other, the suffering is suffering. And if your job is to relieve suffering, in the first one, you say you're doing well with 7, try 7 more. Right? Maybe. While with the other one, you say here's a quarter if you can.
That's being with.
What do you mean?
Being with this other person.
Yeah, that's the heart open. The heart open. The mind clear and seeing. See, and so when you're sitting with somebody who's in pain, their pain is your pain and you're doing everything you can to relieve the pain. At the same moment, there is a place in you that knows it's absolutely perfect. And you're not sitting around flickering saying, if you'll take away the pain, then God, I'll know you're real. See? You're just so in God. You're just so in the perfection. You're merely playing your part as a healer. But whether the healing happens, that's in God's hands. It's not in your hands. And it's that balance that is, and what you find is that a lot of people who go, quote, on the spiritual journey, get up into their heads, and they get very, their compassion is very dry. It's very dry. and they'll say, oh, it's all right. Yeah. And they'll be philosophical. And they're doing it partly because they understand and partly as a defense against the pain of the heart. And then you get other people who get completely lost in their hearts. And they are just so emotionally caught in pity and sadness that they have no sense of the spaciousness of the whole process. And it's just that delicate balance. That's what compassion, that's the game of compassion. And anything less than that is just getting, if you get just stuck in your heart, that's what I was talking about today, about romanticism and melodrama. That's all heart space. So, is that dealing with that?
Yeah, except what is the issue of responsibility? Seeing the suffering of the world, I have dreams about this, I see it, I'm trying to see it. What does responsibility mean in terms of that?
Responsibility means that as you become more aware, meaning, if I go up into a plane of consciousness or change my plane of consciousness or change my awareness to the point where I see that you and I are really one being in two forms, okay, and I've seen it and experienced it. Now, how then, from now on, could I treat you as an object? In other words, as my awareness gets rooted in deeper and deeper understanding, my life just automatically becomes one of an act to relieve suffering because it is all me that is suffering. Right? I am just working to relieve suffering. The whole bodhisattva process, the whole process of becoming an instrument, an aware person is an instrument for the surcease of suffering. That's the part you play, even though you're not attached to whether suffering ends or not. Can you hear that? That you work full-time to end suffering without an attachment to whether suffering ends. You work full-time to make heaven on earth, knowing full well that earth is just the way it's supposed to be. And there's a heaven, and this is earth, and this is just it, and there are the five things. Right? And there's nothing else you can do. I mean, you try with your degree of awareness to stop helping relieve suffering. Just try it. You can't even do it. What else are we going to do? I don't have anything else to do. You know. You know, most people's hearts are open to their family, to their friends, and then there are the others. But there is a talk about the smile, a little smile at the edge of the mouth of the Buddha. They call it the smile of unbearable compassion. Unbearable compassion. Because when you look at not just your family and your friends, but your friends' families and your friends' families' families and on, and everywhere you look, you see that suffering. How can you bear it? If you pull back into your head, you lost your humanity. If you stay in it, you're going to drown. So you get this balancing act. You're in it, but you're also not in it. You're in the world, but not of the world. It's just a very delicate place. And you can't arrive at it with intellect. You've got to go through the whole thing. You've got to go through the horrible pain of seeing the suffering. Because there is such an incredible... I mean, we've just heard a little of it here in the few days. I mean, we walked into this, a nice group of people driving up in their cars with their bags, go in room 6 and room 7. Suddenly, there is this scene in which you look around and you see that in every human life here is this incredible amount of suffering. Well, how many retreats do you have to be at before you walk down the street and you know that behind every smiling face is more of the same stuff? And how do you bear it? How do you bear it? Most people bear it by closing their hearts. And then they feel closed down because, and that's the problem, that many of us in our journeys of awakening opened our consciousness to the point where we saw that everybody is us, and then we couldn't live that way because we couldn't stand it. So we turned off those higher planes of awareness. And you've just got to be rooted so much. Maharaji just kept hitting. I mean, it just feels, he didn't do it, but I kept feeling he did it. But I mean, he didn't keep saying it to me, but I kept feeling hit by these things. Serve people, feed people, relieve suffering. It's all perfect. It's all perfect. It's all perfect. There's nothing to do. Do it. Do it. There's nothing to do. Do it. Work harder. He's doing fine work. He's working hard. Ha, ha, ha. Well, look at all that work. I mean, the whole thing, the confusion was incredible. And the confusion was just these planes of consciousness. And you just have to live with all of it at once. That's what I mean is finally the game isn't getting high or coming down. The game is being open to all of it. Your lows and your highs and all of it all at once. One more.
Are those planes really separate or do we just perceive them as separate?
Yeah, we just perceive them as separate. Well, it's not a purpose, it's a clinging. It's a clinging that you're clinging very strongly to your senses, your eyes, your ears, your nose, your mouth, your tongue, your skin, and your thinking mind. That's one frequency. So then you break that clinging and something you tune into something else and there's clinging there too. So it seems discontinuous, like dreaming and waking states. And then finally, it's all discontinuous. You're here, and then you're there, and then you're there, and then you're here, until pretty soon there is no here and there is no there. It's all right here, just more here and more here and more here. Okay. I mean, if you sit, for example, and you're really feeling open and you're quiet, and you look at somebody else, and you just start to focus, just bring your mind to one point a little bit, you'll see their face start to change, and you'll see the whole thing turn into liquid, and you might see them just disappear into white light, and you're just going through planes of consciousness all the time. And then you go like that, and you bring yourself back in. And then you go out again, and you go like that. Most people, that's happening all the time. But they are so attached to this plane is real. You know, they say, oh, I'm hallucinating, or something's going wrong with my eyes, or something like that. Until finally, you're not clinging so strongly to this plane. And then it all happens. I look at people sometimes, and they turn into giraffes and lobsters, and they're in the middle of telling me something. You know, they're just saying, and then my wife did this, and I don't know what to do about this, and I'm looking, and suddenly there's this huge octopus that's with got big tentacles, and it's just saying this stuff. And I've learned not even to flicker, just to keep saying yes, yes, and it's like you're talking to an octopus, and then slowly it turns back into a person. Because usually we freak, we just can't handle those changes. But as you open it, all should be changing all the time, because nothing is that solid. It's just, we just invest it with a solidity. Okay. What happens now?